community, everybody. I'd like to welcome the City Council, City of Shore Acres meeting for Monday, July 14, 2014 at 7 p.m. First off, before we start the regular business, if you have a cell phone, if you would put it on vibrate, we'd greatly appreciate it. With that being said, first item on the agenda 1.0 is call orders, roll call.
Matthew Schnell present.
Neil Moore here.
Bo Bunker present.
Rick Moses present.
Richard Adams present.
Mike Wheeler present.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Second item, Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one nation, under God, indivisible.
Next item of business is 3.0 special presentations. We don't have any of those at this time tonight. Moving on to 4.0 approval of minutes. I believe any of the correction that needs to be made.
Well, I'd like to consistently on the dollar amounts, financial reports, not round them up because we got some rounded and some not. So on the CDs, I'd like instead of $250,000 for it to be $249,741. Property tax collected instead of $787,000. Let's do the correct number, $787,043. And that's the only correction I would request.
Okay. That being said, so let's put a motion on the print of the minutes.
I'll move the minutes as proposed to be amended by Alderman Adams.
Okay, motion to approve the minutes be amended by Mr. Moyer. I have a second.
One second.
Thank you, Mr. Wheeler. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Moving on to 5.0, council reports request. 5.0, my move to portal meetings and attendance. Just to give the citizens a. David Stahl and I met with the folks of Republic, supposed to do our trash pickup, going over heavy pickup last week. Discuss the issues that involve with heavy pickup, light pickup, trash cans being left in the road, basically not being done. They have put a new policy procedure into place. Basically, if trash cans are left in the middle of the street or off on the side, not pushed to the side, those actual employees are being terminated from a public. They're actually mounting cameras now on their trucks and things, so they're actually being aggressive and actually doing something besides being proactive about it besides just letting it lie. The heavy pickup, they purchased the new equipment. They'll get it. We're hoping, David, he said, what, about 30 more days to get it up and running?
The 17th.
So they'll have the new unit hooked up and ready to roll. However, we have not had an increase in some time, in some years, and that is coming around. They do have a proposed budget or proposal, excuse us, for us to look at. He has not had that handed out to us as of yet, so that is coming. So I'm sure that we're going to have some type of trash pickup bill, basically looking at an increase somewhere along the line. We are going to look at multiple options, but when we get more details on that, we'll let you know. But that's not what we know at this time. That being said, also, I want to thank our former mayor, Matt Weber. He was gracious enough to use his truck and his trailer and his fuel and his time to take us last, I believe it was last Saturday, Fourth of July. We basically did the parade from the port. We handed out basically icicles, ice pops, I guess that's what you want to call them. I'm very proud to say that every council member was there and contributed to that. So everybody was there to help out. I guess the former mayor was there helping us quite a bit. So that was a real good event. My understanding from most people in the crowd, they loved what we were doing. Everybody else was handing out hard candy, and we were handing out popsicles, and they loved it. We went through, I believe, about 2,500?
2,000
popsicles. And I will say all this was donated. None of this cost the city anything. This was donated by council folks and myself. So that turned out to be very, very well justified. So we really enjoyed it. We really did. Had a few injuries along the way, but other than that, we did okay. But with that being said, that's all I have for reports at this time. We're going to move on to 6.0, public hearings, public comments. 6.1 is citizens' comments. This is the opportunity for the public to address the council. or comment on items which appear on the agenda. This is on or off the agenda. Time is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Comments are to be directed to the City Council. Dialogue with the audience is not permitted. Council members are prohibited by law to participate in the discussion or deliberation of items not specified or identified on this agenda. With that being said, I'm going to start this way. Anybody have any comments this evening they'd like to make? Anybody else? Mr. Stanley, you can step up here and answer.
Thank you, Stanton, 128 City of Arnold.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk about grass encroachment on the roads. I live on the Shady Lawn. We've got, I call it crabgrass, growing up through the asphalt. We've mentioned this several times. We said we were going to use a flamethrower type thing, and they ran a test strip on my street. Didn't work. And it burned off, but it came right back up. It didn't kill the roots. So I would like for the city to try something else and to try to save our roads. It's a safety issue because it covers up the white lines on the side. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton. Anyone else like to speak? And that being said, we'll move on to 7.0, administrative reports. 7.1, City Administrator David Stahl, General Activity Report. 7.11, Water Plant Number 1 update.
Good evening. We're in the process of continuing the piping for the hydrostatic tank. Which you can see a cover over it now. They've sandblasted the new piping and painted it. They've also exposed the line that we'll be tying into. That will give us an 8-inch tie between the pumps and our distribution system. I believe that they have piping that's being fabricated for the underground portion now. The underground portion is finished and is in the place in the process. Sandblasting has been finished. The primer's been put on it. The final touches on that. We got a quote today from the painting contractor that's doing that work as a sub to our grant contractor, R&B Group, for them to paint the remaining piping that was not part of the grant project and the tank itself, the 20,000-gallon hydrostatic tank. It really needs to be painted, and I don't think we'll get a better price than having them already mobilized and on site. I got a quote from them. It's $8,700, and got to look at what we have for maintenance and the water fund, and see if we can't go ahead and pull the trigger while they're out here and have all their equipment on site and get that tank painted. It's large and it will stand out once everything else is finished and is bright and shiny. And that tank is certainly not. That said, we're probably still about 2 weeks away from having that water plant back online. And restoring our full capacity. Shore Acres Water main project. You see just west of the water plant here, next to City Hall, stacks of blue pipe and equipment. They've mobilized today. They've got crews on the ground. They've staked the last couple of weeks, and they're ready to start planting pipe. We have a meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock with the engineer. To look at what the schedule of work will be in the order of progression and when they expect to be completed. And I can forward you some information on what that schedule looks like tomorrow. On West Forest, we laid another 80 feet of water main on West Forest from West Country Club going east. That leaves us about 40 more feet to get to our stopping point. There was some discussion today of taking it past the first entrance culvert and going to the second one and stopping, and that's what we'll be doing, and then we'll be prepared to tie that into the existing water main. In reviewing the drawings that were dropped off last week, this is here Thursday, it looks like we may have a conflict with two stormwater culverts that will run under the ditches that are on West Country Club, and we may have to move some more line. We've never exposed that line. We don't know how deep it is. There's culvert already in there. If the flow line doesn't change much, we may dodge that bullet, but we may have some more work there to do as well. As soon as we get this last 40 or 50 feet put in, we'll be able to tie that line in and have that fire hydrant back live. First Monday heavy trash pickup, as the mayor mentioned, we've visited with Republic and expressed our unhappiness with the performance over the last several months. They have made an investment in equipment. That truck will be out here as soon as they can get it here. I understand they'll get it back from where the work was done on the 17th. And we're not going to wait for a Monday. As soon as they have it available, they're going to come out and pay the bill and it needs to be picked up. In the meantime, we had done a day of curbside chipping, as we had in the past, to try to get material out of here. And we did reduce significant amounts of material along the curves. So we can't get the rest of that out of here this month and be online in August. They also made a representation to us that they are planning to purchase a new truck in addition. So maybe they'll get some more reliable equipment. And our first Monday heavy pickups will continue on time. And that's my report.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Any questions from council?
I have a couple of questions.
All right, Ms. Dahl. Ms. Snell,
I can't
I apologize.
That's all right. I can't see anything over there. Just a couple of questions. As far as with Republic doing our trash pickup, is there going to be any kind of compensation given to the city, being as we've had to lose service that was contracted for? And I think it's important that we be mindful as far as renegotiating a contract with them to account for the disruption of citizen services that have been provided.
That was one of the questions actually brought up, and so negotiating when he's doing the proposal was that is part of it, because we have taken a big hickey waiting on their equipment. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and then the other one I have is about the hydrostatic tank. Apparently that was outside the spectrum of the initial grant funding. Was this something we didn't realize we were going to need to have $8,700 to paint it? Is it more aesthetic or functional?
Well, if at the time that the damage was occurred, it was not a necessity to repaint the tank. It's now been 5 years. The tank could probably make it another 2 years without painting, but it doesn't make sense for us to get that far behind the ball. It was not grant eligible, as was not recoating the interiors of the two ground storage tanks. We hadn't flushed and cleaned. That's all that the grant would cover. Any additional work. We were very fortunate it didn't require any additional work, but that would have been on us as well. I mean, we're taking advantage of what's available to us, but it's not just pay for anything. It's recovery from storm damage.
Oh, and I understand that. I have some questions when it comes to things such as the wastewater line that's across the valley there, where there's been a gate malfunction, and because it was found that it wasn't properly painted. So things like, when it comes to things like painting, I get it, but I'm just not, I don't understand why 5 years ago the paint wear has gone that far south when we did have a storm prior to that.
I don't think it has. I think it's just time.
Okay.
Yeah. It does have wear and tear on it. It's sort of, when you're looking at this, and this is something I'm trying to get more involved in, it's sort of like the roof that we had the lean-to out here. They need to replace the roof, like on the building and whatnot. We can either try to take it over now or wait 2 years for it to fall apart and then spend more money to do it. So trying to look ahead a little bit. But it does, and you visually go look at it. You should maybe set up a time to go to David so you can walk and get an idea.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
You had said that it was the tank and some additional piping that needed to be painted, or just the tank?
No, while we were doing that, there was piping that was not part of any of the projects. For example, valve and stub out for draining the tank that's on the bio side. You know, now that was all submerged, of course, in flood water, and another 5 years has gone by.
Okay.
And they'll do a better job. They put 6 layers of paint, of coating material, 2 polyurethane, 2 urethane under there. Each one is 3 mils, so we get a real good surface, which is better work than we can do brushing something on ourselves. And it's also blasted to what's called near white, so we get right down to the metal and get a real good finish on it. It should last us for a good 15, 20 years.
Okay. Any other questions from council? No other questions. Moving on to the next item of business, 7.2 monthly police report. Our Chief Harrison. Chief, welcome back.
Thanks, sir. Good evening, Council.
Good evening.
I spent the week last week in Phoenix, and I don't know why anybody would want to live in Phoenix, Arizona in July. I think that's one of the resorts were so cheap that time of month. You have the June report. I'm so sorry I left the word April activity report. Thanks to cut and paste and not go back and correct. So if you can make that correction for me, I didn't want to burn another piece of paper up for you. Look at the calls, our summer calls have picked up just a little bit. A lot of it is due to children being out of school, and we know that when they're out of school, that things start going on in the neighborhoods. We've tried to be proactive in IDing these people that are out late at night. It's the crimes that go on, like toilet paper in the trees, and we have a good suspect in one of them. But we are trying to ID the people that's walking around after dark and riding golf carts after dark in some of these areas so that we can be proactive in making sure that we don't have a city that's filled with toilet paper in the mornings. You'll notice that the citation numbers have gone up. That's a touchy subject, I know, in any city because it's not for revenue generating, but the calls that those numbers have gone up is thankfully we finally have a sergeant back on the rolls at the police department, and we've been able to manage the department better with two of us than with one of us. So we've been out on the highway more, being more active out there and making sure that we're trying to slow folks down that are coming through the city. We'd like to tell you some good news, or at least I think it's good news. In the last 6 months or so, since January, we've had two officers that's been awarded their advanced proficiency certificates, and that's a good thing for those young men. It's training and time and service combined that gives them this proficiency certificate. And quite frankly, what it means to you guys is they're more able to do a good job for you and prevent liability out there. They're better trained. We've had one that's completed his intermediate certificate. So out of seven, basically out of six full time, three of them had advanced their proficiency certificates in the last 6 months or so. On another good note, as far as training goes, seven of our officers have already finished their mandatory training for the cycle that ends in August of 15. Last year, we were up to the week before trying to get people to complete that, so that's quite an accomplishment to have those guys motivated enough that they're getting on and getting their training completed early. That way, next year, that's not the priority come summer. I didn't want that to be the priority in the last 3 weeks. That was a priority I set up front to get that done. One of the ways we did that was we signed up for Police One, which is an online provider for training. And since we signed up for Police One just a couple of months ago, we've had over 115 hours of training completed by Police One. In this cycle, the officers have completed 544 training hours. That's a lot of hours. And at very low cost, we've gone out. We've got some very, very small. You call them grants if you want to. It's basically making a phone call and them saying, we'll give you a grant for this. You don't just, sign your name saying you'll use this in your scope of duties, and we won't charge you. Some of them were advanced child abuse investigation type classes. We've also found some other classes that were free that were in the area, so no overtime was having to be spent, no travel time to speak of. So we're looking for the cheap way to do things and trying to stay in line with what the city expects during these budget years, which is watching the dollars, which is what our citizens expect from us as well.
Any questions from the council?
I'd just like to say congrats on the training completion.
Thank you.
Congratulations again, Chief. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Item 7.3, monthly public works report. David, you're going to do that?
Yeah, the written report's in your packet. During the course of June, we made four water line repairs for roofs and rakes. A couple since then, but that's what happened in June. Back on the mowing, weather permitting, we've got the boom mower rolling again. They did 2.5 miles last month. I know additional mowing has occurred in the last week. I spoke about the hydrant that's been relocated on West Forest. I spoke last month about the sound wall or isolation valves put in. Since then, visiting with the engineers, it looks like when they drill the footings for the sound wall that they'll actually miss the pipe and not hit it, and if that's the case, then we'll just reopen our valves and restore that line without having to move it at all, even in the future, unless there's a problem there. Storm Shutters is a project that's ongoing to make some modifications to our storm shutters here on City Hall. I'd like to get that done before we get a storm in the Gulf, and that's underway. And we are short one field person, John Ruiz, is out with a reoccurring knee injury that was not job-related, was prior to his employment. He's going to be in physical therapy. He has a meeting tomorrow with his doctor, and we'll hear tomorrow what his return to work date is. We hope to get him back as soon as possible and have that relief. And that's all that's on that report.
I've got a question of the sound wall. You said there are posts now for the wall?
No, just located. This is located. Oh, they haven't done any drilling. Every time we talk to TxDOT, and there's anything related to the city, we're holding them up. They'd have been here last week. When we were discussing the sewer line, they represented they couldn't make any changes because the portions had already been cast and were ready for shipment. When we're working on the water line, turns out that they haven't cast any of them yet, so they're certainly not ready for shipment at that time. So I don't know what the status is. They don't keep us in the loop on that except for where we have conflicts.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have a question. How are the, I'm getting this a lot, how are the ditch mowings being prioritized?
Well, previously, they were done by water book order. Now that we're shorthanded, the priority has been put to high traffic first. So they'll be on Shore Acres Boulevard first and then work out to the smaller streets. Not trying to neglect anywhere, but we do have some that are worse than others, and so they're going to move around and not be locked into just doing it by the book. I mean, it didn't really make a lot of sense to start at the west and move east and let ditches that are particularly bad just keep getting worse in the process and while you're doing some that are not high priority. Same time, you don't want to skip all over town. You lose all the efficiency. So they're prioritizing them and trying to do the best they can.
I would like to see them actually get and measure the height of the brush and the 6-foot tree I've got in mind, because I mean that really is an issue. So okay, I just wanted to know how those are being prioritized. Thank you.
And I will mention that I have told Mr. Ingram, and I have been assisting him in contacting other cities and jurisdictions that have experienced boom mower operators, including TxDOT contractors in Harris County, to identify anyone who wants to moonlight. We'd be happy to have them out here on their day off, whether it's a weekend or it's from 4 to 6, or provide the equipment. We just need to get the machine rolling. And with brakes and with the other issues that we've got going on right now, we just need a body.
Well, is there a way, David, I know there's got to be, to say, okay, well, we haven't done this street in 4 months. This street we've done twice in the last 4 months. Is there a way to go back and look at that and hit some of these areas that are so bad right now?
Well,
that's what they're trying to do.
They're trying to triage it. I mean, it isn't a matter of time. It's, as Councilman Schnell said, it's a matter of how bad has the ditch gotten. There are some ditches that are just deep and hazardous, and we don't want somebody to try to get to. And then there are others that, if it's up a foot, you know, it's going to go down on the list, even if it's been longer since we got to it. But it's just a time and effort equation. If we don't keep the thing rolling every week, there's no way we can keep up.
Any other questions? Moving on to the agenda, item 7.4, the Affordable Housing Program. Steph Evans, and Phil Neal, and he's here tonight to discuss that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Council. Neal, let me swap you. Oh. I made some notes.
This one.
Okay. And family, people, members of Shore Acres, I've been with Seth now for 3 years. Southeast Texas Housing Finance Corporation. What they do is a nonprofit organization, and they provide housing, multifamily and single, for those people within a certain income bracket that need some assistance and help. Prior to my being there for 3 years now, we were unable to do anything really in Shore Acres because we're in Harris County through a SEF program. It all had to go through Houston with the Houston or the housing finance there on 290, which was offering some help, but we never did get any really input on that because we couldn't get any records on how many people were helped or not helped or whatever. So every meeting that I would attend, I would get on our director, Ron Williams, and say, Ron, what's happening? Are we just an orphan bunch of people there in Shore Acres? What can we do, or what can be done to help somebody in Shore Acres if we needed any help like that? In essence, like I said, it's an affordable housing program, meaning you have to meet certain criteria to qualify for that. The little folders that I just handed you, I think, will give you a quick synopsis, whatever you want to call it, on how effective this program has been. This offers people within a certain income range. Different counties have different income ranges, and that's based on HUD. HUD puts those boundaries in there. For instance, Galveston County or Harris County for us, we have an input here or the wage. You cannot exceed $76,600 approximately. If you're within that range or below, that's the starting point where you can qualify for assistance, a grant from SEF to purchase a home, meaning for down payment money or closing cost money. And they have three different categories there. They have a 5% grant, a 4% grant, and a 3% grant. The average has been at about $6,500 per person that has qualified. And to qualify, it's very simple and very easy. The people have to have a job, of course. Their income has to be within that rate that I just said here, based on that $76,500. They have to pass an educational examination, which is about a one-day deal. They take it on the internet. They have to pass it. It costs them $100 for a single person, or if it's a family affair, man and woman, they both have to take the exam, they both have to pass it, and it's $60 each then, or $120. So that's the only dollars and cents out of pocket for those folks to do that. But to get the grant of $6,500 on an average is pretty good, which helps them get into a home possibly that they weren't able to. Sorry to say that of the, what do we got, about 1,500 loans have been already accounted for. Nothing here in Shore Acres. No one needed any assistance in Shore Acres. Now this goes through the realtor to start with. If they're familiar with the programs and feel that they can maybe offer those folks the assistance, so we got several obstacles there. Probably no one needed the help or needed any assistance. So we don't have any for them. The loan amounts up to this date from conception, which is approximately 18 months, this program has been in effect, is close to $200 million. That's a lot of money. Now you take 5% of that as grant money or 4% as grant money. SEF has covered a lot of ground and helping a lot of people get into homes. This is all over the state of Texas now. And on here, of course, Harris County is the leader with the amount of people that they've assisted or have been assisted and have joined us here. Along with that, It's been going so great, so good, that our PR person really doesn't have to go around and do a lot of footwork and advertising to get people in, or lenders. We right now have over 80 lenders on this program willing to loan money based on this criteria to these folks, and this grant money is non-repay. You don't have to pay it back. Once you qualify, it's yours. Helps you buy the house. These are for folks that need that little extra. They're on the fence. We have a lot of folks that are just on that fence. They have good credit, mind you, in this program. They have to have 630 or better, which is reasonable.
the one-day full examination that they have to pass. If they miss a question, go back and take it again, but they don't have to pay again. But we're not letting them go with a 75 or 80 average. We want them to be 100%. Now, this little program, the educational program, is for all the buyers. It doesn't matter who you are. You don't have to be a first-time buyer. You could be have 5 or 10 homes before. If you're just in this category and you need that help, we're there to do it. And the questions on the examination are based on everyday knowledge that a person should have that goes before a closing course, a closing session at a loaning institution, and understands what's going on. How do you negotiate interest rates? How much should you pay for a home? How much monthly payments should you pay out of your income, and so on and so forth. Simple things, but things that some people go to these closings, to my understanding, a lot of people are not aware of that. This just brings them up to speed. Just, but in the sense of the amount of dollars that we've CEPRIS put out in these grants, is astronomical, and every month it's getting better and better and better. For instance, last month alone there was 166 grants. But prior to that, on conception, it's been based on an average of 81 grants through the 18 months and roughly $194 million. That's quite a movement. Last month was the same. Now we understand this month is going on and it's accelerating this up the same way. So there's a lot of need out there. There's a lot of these folks that are in that category. And people think about affordable housing. Some people, well, I don't want it in my neighborhood or whatever. But we've got a lot of homes in this area that will fit that. Meaning, to qualify, you can't exceed $250,000 home. But then again, if you need assistance, there's very few people going to be looking at a $250,000 home. So the average home sale is approximately, mortgage is about $130,000. And the grants are approximately, they're averaging out about $6,500 per buyer. So we think that's a doggone good deal, and it's something that we do qualify for at Shill-Rake, is that people needed that help, you know, if we found it, you know. And this goes into the beginning from when they visit a realtor and they find out what's available to me, if I needed any assistance, where do I go get it, and so on and so forth. Of course, our biggest source of things that we do is in multifamilies, in retirement age, 55 and older, where we have really, really some very fine areas out there that people can go to and just pay a portion of their retirement income towards living in these places. And they're really nice. If there's any questions?
I just have one for clarification. So, first of all, I think it's an amazing program. There's a lot of times where maybe you're not FHA qualified because you've already bought your first home and then, God forbid, whatever the heck happened. And so now you can't get that again, which is a lot easier way to become a homeowner. Or if you're not a veteran, then you can't get the VHA loan. So this is for people, obviously, that are working.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to have some sort of proficiency in our beloved English language. They need to understand what they're entering into contractually.
Correct.
What the responsibility is, what's going to be expected of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a different lending program. Mm-hmm. And the interest that's paid pays back into the program, therefore you're able to help more people.
Absolutely.
I like it.
You need a 630 credit score or better.
Mm-hmm.
Got to pass a class. Mm-hmm. And what was the other? Was there something else? Length of employment or anything like that?
The wages, no, not length of employment. Income. They have to have proof of their, you know, of their income. But they can't exceed the FHA, or the HUD, rather, loan amount, meaning on their wages, how much they can make.
Gotcha.
How much they can make. If they exceed the amount of dollars and cents of their income for these particular counties that are on the front here, you can see the variance. It goes from a low of 60,000 in Matagorda County to a high of 87,000 in Brazoria. Now, I asked that question, how does that vary so much? And I didn't get the answer to that, but I'm looking for it. But HUD sets it up, so however they calculate it, that's the guidelines that we have to go by. So it's simple.
Okay.
They got to stay within the income level. They got to take the class. They can pick their whatever grant they want, 5%, 403, and go from there, and have a credit score of over 630. And it doesn't matter whether you're first time buyer, second, third, fourth, or fifth, whatever. The grants are there. If you want to qualify for one, put your name in hat. That's it.
I see a lot of phone numbers on here. Can the citizens contact you, or they need to call? Contact the numbers that are on there?
No, contact the numbers that's on there. That's our Rhonda Mitchell is our marketing director, and she's doing a phenomenal job.
So that's at the 281-555-5714.
Right. Okay. And like I said, it's I had a list at home that showed every county and every city, and of course Shoreac wasn't on there for the cities, neither was Seabrook. So Seabrook hasn't had any assistance like this either. So it's one of many reasons why. Either they don't need the assistance, or they weren't aware of the program that's available to them,
yes,
or whatever.
Do we have a link on our city website to staff? I don't believe it is.
A link to the city website to staff, maybe
we could do that, can add it?
Yes. Sure, you can pull it right up on the internet.
When people are house shopping, they can get on the city website.
Absolutely. Because we've got, how many lots do we have available, David, that we'd love to fill up?
There's a lot.
We were talking two years ago about putting some kind of a program together where we could get some realtors or a track builder or some whatever, and maybe get a conglomerate together and maybe build a house or two, you know?
Right.
And maybe fill some of the lots and get a little more tax revenue.
Well, houses are definitely going up in the city. We've actually added welcome home and welcome to the city on our digital sign on weekends, kicking off. We're trying to do some additional things. So
a lot of good stuff's going on.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate
You're
it.
Welcome.
And I'm sorry I had to take a point of privilege to step out for a minute, so I appreciate it.
You're good.
Thank you, sir.
That being said, we're on to business at 8.0. 8.1, consideration approval of invoices. Does council have time to review the invoices?
I had a question on the shoreline revetment bill. Can you talk about that briefly?
Yeah, the, about
$7,000
or so. Yeah, $7,000. That's the first 30-day billing on their work of putting together the meetings with the advisory group and coordination. They bill for their time. That's all in the contract. They'll be billing every 30 days. That's part of the GLO process, is to have it bill as it occurs.
Is there any other questions from council? If not, someone would like to make a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Nancy, I'll put you down and make a motion. I'll second.
I'll second.
Richard, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye. Okay.
Thank you. Moving on to 8.2, consideration and approval ordinance number 2014-160, amending city code provisions related to overtime authorization records and void time worked. I had this put on the agenda. There's some things that we've been trying to help out in the police department and try to streamline some things. The chief and I have met quite a few times, and Mr. Stahl and I have met quite a few times over. One of the things that we're trying to do, what I'm looking for is for the council to approve this, is the officers at this time, they basically clock in and out. They come over to City Hall, clock in and out. That's day or night shift. It doesn't matter. Their information is all on this site. There is no real tracking other than Mr. Stahl and his staff that go through this time cards. However, the sergeant and the chief never get to see these. I think for a business sense, it's more of a business sense type move to have the officers do a timesheet to where it's checked off by the sergeant and then approved by the chief, so you know exactly what your officers are doing. This isn't it's checks and balances. It's not saying our officers are doing anything wrong, but one, it eliminates them coming over to City Hall and having to come up here to check in and out. They can go straight to work, pull out their timesheet, fill it in and out. This gives the chief a better sense of what's going on, who's worked what hours and whatnot. In order to approve this, to get this done, an ordinance basically had to be changed. So that's what this ordinance is about, to be able to give that approval. With that being said, Chief, would you like to add anything to that?
The only thing I'd add is a criminal overtime by accident, by clocking in a few minutes earlier, you know, relieving an officer and trying to bring him up to date on what's going on, and clocking out 7 minutes late and, or 8 minutes, and it automatically goes into a 15-minute overtime, which is not intended. It's just a consequence of having to walk over here to clock in and out. So we're trying to alleviate minutes here and there. And in the long run, it'll take some of the overtime out.
That being said, council, have any questions?
Do we have the records or documentation to do the manual, or will that have to be put together? Right now, they punch in and punch out. This says there's an alternate to that to keep essentially a timesheet. Do we have those timesheets today, or will they be available shortly?
Well, what it does is it makes it permissible that way, and then the chief and I will
design,
look at what's out there. And they're pre-printed time cards,
right,
and they're, you know, timesheets like that. And he may want to do something on his own. I'll review it to make sure it meets all the accounting requirements we have to have for payroll, and he'll want it to meet all of his requirements. And as soon as that's worked out and we have an approved form, and his ordinance is passed and we make the transition. In the meantime, we'll just continue on with the time cards until that happens.
Any other questions for the council? No questions? Someone like to put a motion on the floor?
I'll move to amend our ordinance, section 2-117.
A motion for the amendment. Have a second?
A second.
Thank you. Alderman Snell. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All those against? I have a thank you. Moving on to business on 8.3, consideration and approval of ordinance 2014-161, amending city code provisions to adopt updated natural and international building, plumbing, gas, mechanical, swimming pool, spa, electrical, and fire codes. Mr. Stahl.
Immediately following Hurricane Ike, we took the opportunity to update our codes to what was then current. We have not updated the codes in the last 5 years. Historically, it's been a common practice to not update with every edition. Some of the codes update every 2 years or 3 years. However, there is a trend to do more regular updates. 5 years is certainly long enough for us to catch up. I know the city of La Porte is in the process of reviewing their codes and going to adopt current codes. This brings us current on the building, international building code, the electrical code, the plumbing code, the fuel gas code, the mechanical code, and the residential code. It adopts a new code, which is the swimming pool and spa code, which is necessary in having adopted the 2015 residential code, because they took pools and spas out of that code and made it a separate code. So that just puts back in what would have been otherwise in the other code. And then this adopts the NFPA 101 life safety code, which is the fire code. We make many references in our ordinances and in the city code to complying with the fire code, but we have never adopted a fire code. Years ago, we used the Southern Standard Building Code, fire code, and that's no longer common practice, and the life safety code is the common code. It will have very little impact on residential structures. It will mostly impact the public buildings and any future building and things that are done at the yacht club. But it is the standard code.
Thank you, Mr. Stahl. Any questions from council?
Aye. Yeah, aye.
Sorry, Mr. Lamar.
This, what they're calling the international code, is that something different than what we have used in the past? I'm familiar with the NFPA, the National Fire Protection. These other codes, are we not following
an international version of this, or what is different about this, and specifically the international part of that is what gives me pause.
If you back up a decade, we had two major bodies of standard codes. You had the Southern Standard Building Code, and you had the Uniform Building Code, and cities would adopt one or the other. In Texas, the state of Texas adopted the International Building Code, IBOCA, which has now become pretty much national codes. And so in terms of the state plumbing codes, the state, to the extent the state has codes, they've embraced, and they say that you are to adopt the international code. The Southern Standard Building Code has gone away altogether. It's been rolled into the international code.
And the only reason I ask that is I do know that, you know, you said most of these codes apply primarily to commercial buildings, not so much our home building inspections.
The residential code here is 1 and 2 family residential code, and that's what we apply for new home construction and for homes. The building code, the one that's just called a building code, international building code, is commercial and utilities.
So this doesn't address our residential codes now?
Yes, there's one in here.
And the reason I ask this is because I do know that there have been instances where we've used different codes during our building inspections, and it's gotten confusing for the homeowners on which code they're supposed to build to,
right?
Especially the people that are contracting out their own work. Mm-hmm. And so I guess from that standpoint, are we adopting a single code, one book that can be used by everyone?
Yeah, these all mesh together now.
Okay.
And we did have the International Residential Code. We had it since, I think, 2001. We adopted a 2006 code in 2008. There was no 2007 code, and the 2008 wasn't out yet. So we adopted the 2006. This adopts the 2015. So now they're doing like automobile manufacturers, and instead of running a year behind, they've just come out with the 2015 codes so that you could adopt them. Another thing that we did here and what's proposed for you tonight is set the effective date as October 1st, which will allow all the construction that's ongoing today to know the date in which the code will change, and any work that's completed between now and October 1st will be under the code they started the work at. And if you come in with plans or something, you'll know that what date the new code is going to affect. And the idea is to get on the same page so that Short Acres and LaForte and Seabrook are all on the same version and the same edition of the codes.
Clarity is always good. Thank you.
Any other questions? No other questions? Look for a motion for 2461.
I'll make a motion to adopt ordinance 2014-161.
Thank you, Mr. Weaver. Do I have a second?
I have a second.
Thank you, Mr. Bunker. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against?
Me.
Nancy. All right. 4-1. Ayes have it. Another one point. 8.4. Discussion of rules and order procedures of council meetings. Councilman Moore.
I was prompted to bring this up based on some examples from our last meeting. There's an attached memorandum that points to the council members, the mayor, and the city administrator. A couple actions that took place at our last meeting were there were nominations to the Audit Review Committee that the proposed nominations were not generally known via the agenda or any other means prior to the meeting. And it seems to me that if we're going to have citizens volunteer for various appointments, that there should be an opportunity for them to be present at the meeting and be available to represent themselves at the council and to the public. I think that's worthwhile because, like I said, at that meeting there were proposals made that were not generally known, at least to this council member for sure, prior to the meeting. The second issue, which was brought up at the last meeting, was the 2013 audit report. I made an attempt, as if I were a citizen, to find that report before the meeting. and I counted away on the city's website a number of different ways, and it was generally accessible by the council members themselves and the city administrator. I understand that the audit report wasn't considered a city document until after the actions by the council, but nevertheless, by not being accessible, the citizens could not avail themselves to review that somewhat lengthy document, and that means that they could not come to that meeting and during the public comment period either raise issues that they may have elicited from reviewing that draft report or have the benefit prior to public comment from the auditor and any discussion which the council may have had with the auditor. Again, it's a point of, I guess, concern that we should try to allow our citizens and those who are interested in the way the city operates to have all the information that's available to the council prior to the meeting if they're going to be limited to their comments or inquiries during that first 5 minute public comment period. Now, an alternative to that, which I know there may be some reluctance to, is to allow items that are on the agenda be addressed by members of the public when and after those reports are presented to the council so that the citizens can receive the benefit of whatever explanation is there prior to making any inquiry or commentary on that, which is not the fashion that would be possible now by confining the public comments before the item has even been presented. I have heard from some folks that this practice has, I guess, soured them on attending and participating in the meetings because it narrows the possibility of them getting information from the presentations to either clarify their understandings or to give them something to react to, but not being able to do that because their period of time is confined to the beginning of the meeting before the presentations are made. I think we may have gone a bit further in organizing our meetings the way we have for meeting expediency as opposed to interaction and dialogue with members of the community. And that's something which I certainly made a big point of when I was running for council, maybe I should say walking the streets for council, and I think it still remains a good idea. Now, I've heard from folks say that, well, we're running our meetings now the way other communities do. Well, if we were other communities, we'd probably be living in those other communities. So I'm not sure that that's a sufficient justification for confining public commentary at the beginning of the meeting before items are presented. Those are my thoughts on the matter. I certainly would like to hear from other members of the council, and ideally I'd like to hear from members of the public, but we can't do that at this meeting, maybe.
So you have
council? That's fine.
Any questions from the council? Comments?
I do have a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, I was listening. I can multitask. April 30th of this year, I did send an email to David Stahl referencing under Texas law that the 2013 audited report must be made available to the public and asked exactly how we were going to go about doing that, and I did get a reply from him. You have to wait until the 13 audit report is then, is here and approved, and then it becomes public record. That's what Mr. Stahl, I'm not going to read your whole email, but that's what you told me. I did bring it to the attention of Mr. Stahl on April 30th of this year, and local government section or code section 103.003, where that is for provisions, it says it has to be 180 days after September 30th. So it's 180 days after September 30th. So that's what the law states.
Correct.
And the audit wasn't even completed until May the 9th. So we are well within the guidelines. And anybody that wants to, if you have a hard time hunting through the city's website, I'm sure that you can make a phone call and probably get an email directly to you as an attachment. So, I'm not quite getting that. And I'm also not getting the blindsidedness of appointments, as our agenda is posted well outside of the 72 hours as required by law. We're usually out on Thursday. And 8.4 and 8.5 of the June 23rd meeting, 8.4, appoint two members of council to the audit committee, and 8.5, citizens at large. It was out there for people to marinate. I mean, if you really want to be on it, I think if you really want to be on an audit committee as a citizen, you probably are following what's going on in the council, and that you should at least be here, write a letter, like it has happened last week, or have a representative there to say, this person is interested, here's their letter. So, I'm kind of missing some of that logic. And as far as the way that the council meetings are being conducted, I know a lot of citizens aren't real thrilled that they don't get to speak to every agenda item when they're brought up. The way I look at it, and I'm sure I may have some people blowing my phone up this evening, we can either have a council or we can have a town hall meeting, second and fourth Mondays. We were elected to represent. You have 2 weeks, sometimes, and depending on how the calendar falls, 3 weeks. The citizens have that much time to contact their representatives. Mr. Uvino, you contacted myself and Mr. Adams and said, I want to be on and speak to the SEP program. It happened. That's what it's about. That's why we represent you. We're here to listen. You know where we live. And so I just think we don't need to go into a town hall format. Our government, our city code allows for council. It's the mayor's agenda. Our city code allows for council to override in certain instances. You just have to know how to use Robert's rules to do so. So it's about that. I get emails, phone calls, people showing up at my house, happy grams in the mail, both at my home mailbox and here. I get that contact, and it's important for citizens to contact us. We're here to serve you. We can't come back to your house every single day. We're here. It's public information. It's public records. So that's where I stand on it. And, people that feel slighted, I hate that. I hate that for them. But we are here to represent them, and we're all doing the best that we can, folks. We really are. And that's all I have to say.
Any other council remarks, comments?
The audit packet was sent with the agenda, the 72 hours in advance of that last meeting, right?
Right.
So the entire packet that council gets is sent to all the citizens.
Anything 72 hours prior, basically, whatever we see.
Okay.
Is that correct?
No, let me make clarification. The agenda that citizens get does not have the links.
No, it doesn't have
links. Well, every one that I've received is different than the one I've received as a council member. Council member one has the links to the agenda packet. The citizen one does not seem to do that.
When the agenda is posted on the website, the packet is also put on the website, and it's the full packet. It's available on the Thursday. There are some late additions, like this evening or today, this afternoon, the minutes were completed, but that was added to the packet on the council on the website when it was emailed out to you today. The constant contact bulletins you sign up to get the meeting notices is the same meeting notice that goes to council and to citizens. And in the top block, it has a direct link to a PDF of the agenda, so you can see an actual PDF of the agenda. It also has a link to the full packet. And the way that works is if it gets updated, like if you only looked at it today, if you opened it up before the meeting tonight, you clicked on it, you would get the updated packet with everything in it. And then there's a link to past, and it takes you to the website where you can look at past meetings. But that's on there for Thursday for all of them. It's been over a year.
Okay. My suggestion, if you're not getting the councilman, you need to come up here and visit David so you can look it up, maybe pull it up from one of the individuals.
I guess so. I didn't think
it was there either, but then I saw the sentence that says click on packet, little word packet highlighted.
Okay,
underlined.
I may have missed that. Like I said, it was different than the item by item.
It's the same thing that we get that they can have access to.
Any other comments? With that being said, before I adjourn, I'm actually going to make a comment myself. I want the citizens to know, I think this council, it is a new council, myself being a new mayor, we are doing the best we can. This is a thankless job, it really is. No one gets paid for doing this. A lot of people spend a lot of time, their personal time, trying to help the city as much as they can. I know I get numerous calls and emails constantly. I have spent a great deal of my personal time now with this facility, coming back and forth trying to take care of this great city. That's what I ran for, and I love to do it. I will say, however, TML, there was one comment made by Councilman Moyer, and I just want to make sure we're clear on this. Expediency, as far as time, this council meeting is not being run, or we're not taking the folks from not talking for time-wise. I'll stay up here till 7 in the morning if you'd like. That doesn't bother me. What the problem about it is if you really go to a TML class, which Alderman Schnell and I did, and I've gone to a couple more, and I have some more coming up that I'm going to, the rest of them have also, it teaches you basically certain ways of running council meetings. I didn't agree with the agenda beforehand, and that was one of the tickets which I ran on that what I wanted to do. And from the great number of people who voted, basically they were very much for that. We're never going to make everybody happy. We're going to do the best we can. If you have questions, concerns, please get a hold of your alderman. If you don't want to talk to your residents, you're more than welcome to come up here. Mr. Stahl will open up the Tom Coleman room, and you can sit and talk to your alderman to your heart's content. Let us know what's going on. We'll be happy to hear it. That's what it's all about. But by no means was this to restrict and not be transparent. Anything that is going on in this city as far as business, so far I have let the citizens know each and every time. Something that you did not get fully in the past. There's no surprises here. The only surprise that that actually was a mishap on my part is about the accident with the hood of the truck. And I will let everyone know on that, so Republic actually picked up a dumpster and it slid a door out and it hit one of the hood of our trucks. This just happened a couple of weeks ago and it did slip my mind. I did not write it down. But it is being repaired by Republic, and it was somewhere around $500-$600 for the damage, $700 for the damage. Other than that, the citizens know everything that's going on, and that's what we want. I personally am driving the city. If you hadn't noticed that big brown dually truck coming to the city, morning and evenings, even before I go to work, I drive through a lot of the city to take a look. I do care. Everyone sitting up here cares. So I want you to know, we appreciate you showing up to the city council meetings. We don't want a town hall meeting. That's not what we want. We want city council meetings. I appreciate the fact that people speak out. If you don't like certain things being run, I do apologize for that, but this is the way we're going forward. We're trying to bring a new era to the city. I think the city is blooming. You have houses popping up everywhere. This gentleman here is his first time to city council meeting. He's been here about a year and a half, correct, sir, in the city. And I think your words were you love living in the city. That's what I want to hear. That's what makes it worthwhile being up here. So with that being said, we appreciate everybody's time tonight. I appreciate the council's time, Mr. Stahl. And with that being said, I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 8:03. Thank you.